Lions fans. It's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions Podcast. Your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, two guys who run a 4-minute 40. Chris and Case.
Hey, Idaho Lions fans, welcome to the Detroit Lions Podcast, episode 342. This is the official Detroit Lions Podcast for Reddit, officially 1 week closer to playing the San Francisco 49ers, and on the hook with the most wonderful looking man in podcasting, Jeff the Riz Risden. How you doing, buddy?
It is good to be with you. We apologize for the technical difficulties that made this start a little bit delayed for those of you who are streaming this on YouTube. It's not my fault. It's Chris's fault. I was good. I was on time for once. We've got it all worked out, and we're going to have a very good show for you.
Yeah, we got some really, really good stuff. Again, this is going to be a great off season. I mean, it's a tough time to have content. I'll tease something we've got going on in a little bit. I think you guys are going to find it pretty spectacular. Really, nobody's done it before, and it's something, stories that need to be told. I think it's really, really interesting. So I think that's going to be really cool. But today's show, it's a big one. We got the wrap up of the rookie mini camp. I said it without stuttering that time, Riz. We signed Penei Sewell. That was really cool. Who is Swole? And speaking of things swelling, that's a very tenuous play there. But the Lions cap numbers, we'll break down where the Lions cap sits as of today, and it's a really nice story. Swole is the word. Matthew Stafford had an interview with Sam Farmer, who I knew, I had connections to. Good guy. Really, really great.
Great, very good, seasoned NFL reporter who knows what the hell he's doing.
We used to get to hear him on the radio when I lived in L.A. Once a week. And the stuff that he did and the depth he did it in, he's
a good one.
A TV guy who lives in the print format. He's got a ton of great stuff, great stories, really, really good stuff. So we'll talk about that. There's coaching pressers that went on today. Why this year's UDFA strategy is different and possibly better than ever before for this team, at least as long as you guys remember, and a whole lot more. We got a great show lined up. Rizman, you ready to go, brother?
Oh, let's do it.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
Let's get in this. All I see in the chat right now is Chris takes a tequila shot as punishment. I am not reading up. I am not reading up. I don't know.
I'll do one for you, buddy. I like tequila. It's my liquor of choice. So
yeah, I love those shows where we do that. We call it drinking for dollars, I think. Tell people, certain levels of, we should do that. We should actually do a whole just show of drinking for dollars where people can spend and we'll drink basically until the end of the show, and they can watch us react to it the whole time. Do it as a public service to folks to see what the effects of alcohol and otherwise normal functioning people are.
Because I'm normally a fairly cogent person, and I drink a lot. As you see, I drink a beer every time I do this. But I very, very rarely get legally intoxicated. I learned this from Sammy Hagar, of all people. He drinks nonstop, but he never drinks to excess, and I don't either. So drinking to excess would be something new and unusual and fun for me, probably.
I'll tell you,
and probably more fun for the listeners and the viewers, because I am a
funny.
Chris, you know this about me. I am a weepy drunk. I am a sentimental weepy drunk that overshares a little too much.
I've spent some time in the back of an Uber with you.
That was not my finest hour.
No, but it was a great night.
It was a great night.
Oh man, Malcolm and Ken and you and I just tied.
Oh, we shut,
what is it, two, three places down? That was crazy. Just absolutely.
Yeah, they made us leave one place and we went to another place, and they were shocked that we were like alive.
It was good. It was good stuff. And we'll do that again. Training camp party this year. You can join us. We'll talk more about that coming up.
Malcolm, Ken, I need a redo.
All right, let's get into this. The Lions wrapping up rookie minicamp. A lot of stuff going on here. These guys finally, you spend all that time thinking about the draft. We had Senior Bowl, all the free agency, everything, trying to put the team together. And finally you get cleats on the field. No pads, No tackles, but we got the boys on the field. Matthew,
yeah.
Big Dom, thank you, brother. Having a beer and getting to join the pod live from an 80-degree front porch. Nothing better. Nothing better
nice. Than
you, Dom. You're a great dude, man.
I almost did this from my front porch, but there's so much traffic, and everybody in my neighborhood freaking mows all the time. So it would just wouldn't have been good audio. So I'm inside.
Leffler saying I look thin. Thanks, man. I've been working the Peloton hard and trying to. When I drink, I do drink to excess, but I do it at very limited times now. It's the college. I learned. Sorry, I got to take this sidetrack. I learned that it's recovery mode for your liver. Like if you give your liver time off, it can recover and get back to a good state.
Yes.
Again. So the whole, if you're going to, I was seeing it, there's a comedian that does a thing about it. He's an Irish guy. He was talking about Irish weddings and he had to donate a kidney for his brother and all this other stuff. And he talks about how he learned that, like he's trying to explain, because they don't want like an alcoholic's kidney and all this. And he's trying to explain like what Irish drinking is and all that whole thing. And when he found that, he's like, I gotta tell me lads. we're like an athlete. So anyway, it's good stuff. All right, Lions rookie mini camp. We got our guys on the field. Really, really good stuff. There's one guy in particular we're gonna have on the show next week. And I'll talk about that.
Yes,
later.
We are.
Go ahead, Rich.
And it's gonna be good because he's an interesting case. And I have a couple of questions for him that stem from his minicamp performance as well that I think will be very fun for him to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a great story. We'll tag that a little earlier or later. Okay.
Yeah. So. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
But yeah. So the big thing for me at rookie minicamp was that they didn't have a quarterback and they didn't have any offensive tackles. So that sort of tells you the intensity level and the install level of what they were allowed to do. They had their quarterback coach, Mark Brunell, who's a former NFL quarterback, Tanner Engstrom, who's a special assistant, I think, or an offensive quality control coach, something like that. And he was a quarterback at San Diego and apparently can still sling it. From all reports, the guy looked like he can still play.
He's our third quarterback. Sorry, Blah.
David Blau's kicked to the sidelines. He's a player coach now.
Slopping.
And I mean, Antoine Randall L, former wide receivers coach, was a slash player, yeah. Quarterback at Indiana, quarterback slash gadget player at Pittsburgh with the Steelers. Yeah, so they have a lot of camp arms for it, and they had a couple of coaches that played offensive tackle. So the way that rookie minicamps are now, and honestly, it's a blessing that they had it, because there's a lot of teams that you know, the NFLPA, if you care about the NFLPA and what's going on with it and what's going on with Denver, and I strongly suggest that you do, please check out what I wrote at Real GM. I'm going to do a shameless promo for it. I'm actually wearing a shirt. It's up this week. The NFLPA has painted itself into a very weird corner, and I'm not sure that they know how to get out of it with what's happened to a couple of players in Denver.
Yeah.
And thankfully, that's not happening in Detroit. But that tells you sort of why it was somewhat beneficial that the Lions actually got it in, because there were teams that didn't have it, and there are teams that are going to skip the next set of OTAs where the veterans won't be there at all. The Lions are not going to be in that group, even though they said that they were. It does sound like some of them will be in now, although that's all up in the air. And that doesn't start until next week. And there's a full week. It might actually be the week after that. I don't know. I'm not good with the calendar. I have no idea what
weeks.
Dude, I have no idea. I have no idea when Memorial Day is. I have no idea when my kids are done with school. I'm just going day by day.
My son's last day of school is tomorrow.
No!
I mean,
oh my God!
They have a whole nother week, but he's got his last test that he has to do. And
oh yeah,
don't even bother. They're watching movies.
He's like super brilliant, so he's, yeah.
Yeah, he's top 1% of his SAT, too. He's really... Wow. Like, I don't know where he got it. It ain't me.
He's a sophomore, right?
He's a junior. Junior.
Okay, he's a junior. Okay.
So all we're right. Looking at all the football schools so he can go coach. So really quick, John Paul brings up a really interesting thing. What he's really excited for is to see the trash talking between the offensive and defensive coaches bleeding over to the players. That's something I hadn't considered with the how many coaches that are former players and the level of competitiveness they have in these sort of things. You know, you typically during training camp get a fight or two. That could be intensified this year, couldn't it?
It could be. And just knowing Deuce Staley a little bit, he's an intense dude. Anthony Lynn is a very intense dude. He's a gregarious guy, but he will also, like, if you push him, he's going to push you back.
Yeah.
Aaron Glenn is a Parcells guy. We know what that entails. So, yeah, it's going to be fun this year. And I am one of the things that I'm very happy about, and I actually set this up this week with my wife, is that I will be at every training camp practice this year. Nice. And I'm looking forward to doing that because normally I have to split the time between Cleveland and Detroit. But this year I'm going to be in Detroit the full time. And I've been in Indianapolis and Chicago and Pittsburgh and other places in Cincinnati. This year is all Detroit for me. So it's going to be fun. I will have a lot better feel for the new coaching staff and all the new players in it. I'm very excited about that.
So we have an open invitation from Malcolm for Atlanta for the game there. I don't know if what you're thinking, if it's something you can do. I know
that's going to be tough because that is in basketball season. Yeah. And my kids they're good.
Sandman and I, though, are really focused
y'all
on
should
the Rams
go.
Game.
I do want to see that stadium in Atlanta.
Well, we're talking about the Rams game, though, because I used to live there.
SoFi. Right. SoFi. That stadium looks incredible. It looks like they did it right.
Yeah. He's got a really good friend there. We're thinking of maybe doing a Rams trip out there. And
aside from the Stafford Goff angle, I do want to see that stadium. And as much as I'm loath that the Combine will be leaving Indianapolis, and it will be going to Los Angeles sooner than later, I really do want to see that stadium and that whole complex because it looks amazing.
Yep. All right. We have to get back. Sorry. I do these.
Yeah.
NFLPA is hosing some players. What happened?
Yes. Yes, they are. Just Google Juwan James and you'll see what they did. So, basically, the NFLPA told the players to not go to work out, not go to the OTAs, not go to rookie minicamp. Juwan James, obviously a veteran. He was their starting right tackle in Denver. He got injured working out on his own. I believe he tore his Achilles. It's either an Achilles or an ACL. And Deshaun Hamilton, who was their fourth-round pick a couple of years ago, did the other injury. And I can't keep him straight. I'm sorry. I got too much going on. Got a lot going on right now. And because they were injured away from the facility working out on their own, it's a non-football injury. Why is that important? Because that means it voids their contract. More specifically, it voids the guarantees in their contract. Yeah. So Juwan James lost $14 million because he listened to the NFLPA. And they're not giving him that money.
Oh, they're going to give him something.
They had better give him something. Otherwise,
including that legal fees.
That is really, really dirty pool if they don't give him something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is something that you all need to watch. And I know there's a lot of people that just like to focus on what's going on with the Lions. But the fact that the Lions actually had a rookie minicamp, the fact that the players seem to have learned from what's going on in Denver, that they do need to actually be like they're taking a significant risk, and the NFLPA may or may not have their back.
Yep.
That's something to definitely watch around the league, not just in Detroit, but it's a very, very big deal.
This is something you see happen in a lot of places where the organization that you pay out of your dollar, your paycheck to represent you, maybe is representing themselves in the same way that the organization that you're working for is representing themselves, and they don't have your best interest at heart. There was a thing with Volkswagen a couple years ago after I departed where the leadership of Volkswagen and the leadership of the Works Council in Germany, which is basically the big mandated union by the government, were doing trips together, or there was girls, there was cash, there was all kinds of stuff, so that Volkswagen could get certain concessions from the Works Council that were not in the best interest of the workers. There's these, we so often think, and this is true in so many places in society, we so often think of, you know, labor versus, you know, the organization, and we don't look at everybody has an incentive. Everybody has an incentive. And if you have the wrong people in place, those incentives are never in your best interest. I would always watch because nobody works in your best interest like you do. That's just my little piece. You do what you want.
Yeah, it's something. And if you want to keep going down that rabbit hole, my good friend Brad Ward has the All Eyes on Cleveland podcast. It's actually going on live now. He's interviewing a labor lawyer tonight. It's something. It's definitely something worth watching because he will ask the questions that you want answered on that, too.
No matter who it is, hold them accountable. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying labor is good or bad. I'm not saying
it's a very interesting situation, and thankfully it's not happening in Detroit.
Yeah. Oh, for God's sakes. All right. Yeah. So we have that going on. Rookie minicamp went well. Everybody looked good.
Nobody got hurt.
Yeah. Yep. Nobody got tackled.
No. The press conferences with the players were very engaging. Ali McNeil and Levi Onwuzurike, my goodness. I don't know if they're going to be good. I happen to think they're going to be a pretty good combo. It's real easy to like those guys. It's real easy to look. It's going to be real fun to watch those guys as an odd couple. Like, they need a YouTube show, quite honestly. Yeah. They need to room together, and they need cameras on it, because those those dudes, they have some chemistry already after just 3 days of being together, and they are going to be. Again, I don't know if it's going to work with them being on the defensive line. I kind of think it will, but they're fun, man. You can tell, you can see why. And when Derek Barnes talked on his press conference, Melifonwu talked on his, you know, you can see instantly why Dan Campbell liked these guys. You can see why Brad Holmes gravitated towards these very specific players. It was very easy to see. It was a feel. And the guys who were at Allen Park last weekend, unfortunately, I couldn't make it out there. They said the same thing. They echoed that sentiment that, like, wow, there's a culture here that is very easy. It's very tangible what they're trying to do. And the guys that they have absolutely fit it.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if it's going to work, but they at least have an idea of what they're doing, and they're going after people who fit what they're trying to do. And that, I appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's, that's 100%, 100% agree. Let's talk a little bit about, install. I think that's an important thing, because some of the things that came out this week about the install, was a little bit interesting, and we'll get to that, Mike Hodges, what you just said very shortly. But let's talk about that. Riz, how's that install going? We're all set. Playbook's locked. We're ready to roll, right?
So we had some press conferences today. It's Wednesday. The day's blur.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. So a lot of the assistant coaches talked today. One of them was Ben Johnson. And he was asked about how the playbook installation is going, and, you know, what type of offense specifically they're going to run. And he said something that absolutely blew my mind in a positive fashion. He said, we're not real sure. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not going to directly quote him. Mm-hmm. He said, we are waiting to install everything to see what the guys we have, to get more experience with them, to get a better feel for what they do well and what they don't do well. Chris, that's revolutionary.
It doesn't compute for me. I think you have a scheme and you put guys into it. That's how it should work. That's what I love.
That is exactly why Jared Goff is here and not in Los Angeles. That is exactly why Matt Patricia is now doing something in New England, ruining their drafts. I don't know what he's doing, but he ain't here. This is foreign territory. And I'll go back to Jim Caldwell on this. Jim Caldwell was a strict system guy. He had his Tony Dungy style. Obviously, that's not the offensive side of things, but
go back to Caldwell in the wide nine. I mean, not Caldwell, sorry, Schwartz in the wide
Jim
nine.
Jim Schwartz in the wide nine. Yeah, we're going to get guys who fit what we want to do. We're not going to mold what we do to the guys that we have. And that is a very key distinction.
Can I, as
to what this team's doing?
This is gonna. I'm picking on people. I'm doing this on purpose, right? I'm going to be controversial. But after all this talk about the Patriot way for all these years, isn't that what the Patriots have really done? Reinvented themselves over the course of two decades to change what they did to become a better team and be able to beat the rest of the NFL based on the guys that they had, right? I mean, it's not revolutionary. It's funny when they
had Randy Moss, Tom Brady threw deep a lot. When they didn't, he threw to Julian Edelman a lot. It's not that hard to figure out. When their best receivers were their running backs, what did they do? He threw 150 balls to James White. Using what you've got and maximizing the top skills, catering to what your best players do well. Look, the NBA playoffs are going on right now. One of the reasons why the Lakers and the Warriors are playing tonight is because their coaches, as good as they are, well, they've had injury issues too. The better example would be Washington and Boston last night. Mm-hmm. Their coaching staffs do not cater to what their best players do well all the time. And Washington certainly was better when they just let Russell Westbrook be Russell Westbrook when he's ignoring the plays that are called in.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
That's not what's happened in Detroit. That seems to be what's happening now, is that they're realizing, okay, let's see what we got. Let's see, okay, what does Jared Goff really do well? And I think Brad Holmes would probably have a very good idea on that. Yeah. I think Mark Brunell, who's a very bright guy, will figure that out pretty quickly. What DeAndre Swift's a great receiver out of the backfield. So is Jamal Williams. But let's see what we can do with, you know, some little plays, you know, Texas routes, circle routes, you know, hook outs, quick screens, run them both in the same backfield together and confuse the hell out of the linebackers on the other team. I think you're going to see some creativity. I think you're going to see some adaptability to what the players do well. Look,
they're not going to freeze in the field thinking about the scheme and the various coverages and so on. They're going to do what they do best.
Right.
They're going to play in their world, and that's just again. Yeah.
Jeff Okuda, you're a press corner. Press the guy. Don't line up and press, and then bail without touching it.
Right, right. Oh my God, this is the kind of thing. I mean, this adds to the speed of the team. Right. Not only did we have slow players, but then we slowed them down with the scheme
and
the way they had to diagnose everything.
Yes.
Now we've added speed to the team, and we're taking advantage of that speed to help make them faster on the field in the way that they play on the ball.
Yeah. Ife, you want to play inside technique and press? Do it. Go. That's why we drafted you. We're not drafting you to because you're really good at playing inside technique and pressing. We're not going to play you 8 yards off in a shallow zone. That's not what we're doing here. And it's crazy that the rocket scientist couldn't figure that out, and the guy who wants to keep a lion on a chain can.
Oh, that's a great story. We'll talk about that one later. I loved his sense there. All right. So Lions rookie minicamp is wrapped up. That pushes everything forward with that. Now I want to get to a couple of other dates that are here, and let me find them. I posted them on the old
dates.
There it is. Rookie minicamp is the 14th to the 16th. That's done. The next bit of action with players is going to be the 25th to the 27th, OTAs, and then the 2nd through the 4th, more OTAs. And the 14th through the 17th, more OTAs, with the mandatory minicamp falling in June 8th through the 10th. So we're like May 25th through June 17th going to have a lot of player action, a lot of stuff going on. This is the fun time, right? This is the time when dreams are made, and hopefully we can see them fulfilled come September.
You got me singing Carly Simon's "It's the Stuff the Dreams Are Made Of." I'm not going to sing because that would be really embarrassing. But yeah, and I will be at the mandatory minicamp. By the way, I have been cleared. I am vaccinated. I will be allowed in. So
nice. Cheers. Nice. We're talking training camp. We will both be there. We're working that out. I'm working out a couple things with Ja. I just started my week and a half ago, and so it's been tiring. Let me tell you, it's been good.
You're a working man again.
Yeah.
Play Russia's working man in the background. Yeah.
It's been great. Absolutely love it. Love the people I work with. Love the company. But it's taken a lot out of me. I'm putting it all in. Right. So all right, let's move on. Next piece is the Lions signed Penei Sewell. Rookie pay scale is so important. It took ages to get him in here. We didn't know if he was going to make it, even for the first game of the season. The pressure was on everybody, and they finally were able to hammer out a deal that only took 50% of the salary cap. Is that basically how things work these days?
Oh, thank God those days are gone, Chris. Oh, my goodness. I do not miss the rookie holdouts and the acrimonious negotiations whatsoever. I don't miss the number one pick in the draft, Matthew Stafford being one of them, being the instantly highest paid player on his team and one of the three highest paid players at his position. I don't miss that at all. Look, I will criticize the NFLPA a lot, and I already have in this show. Mm-hmm. They got this right.
Yeah, yeah. Can I say, too, that with that, first there was the theater that they hated each other during the negotiations, and then they came in. It's like, everything's fine. We're great. I'm going to play my heart out for that, right?
Yeah.
Imagine, though, you know how important it is to get your first round draft picks right now. Imagine when you sign away the team, you got the first overall pick, you sign away the team on the salary cap because they hold out for so much and you need that player because they, and then they bust. And first round busts are
super
so much less painful for a team right now. And I would argue that that adds to parity in the league, actually, because the long-term effect of a bad first round pick, Eric Ebron, whatever. I mean, we've done it. We did it multiple times.
I mean, Josh Rosen is the poster boy for this.
Yeah.
He was a first round quarterback. The Cardinals got rid of him after a year. They're like, no, this ain't working. We're getting Kyler Murray.
They're the bullshit.
That's what they said.
Love that guy. Yeah, you know, there are some first round picks from a couple of years ago who will not make their teams this year. Fortunately, that's not happening in Detroit. TJ Hockenson, arrow up. But yeah, there are some dudes, you know, that it's not working, and because the financial penalty for dumping them or moving on, it's a lot easier to move on from your first round pick that fails than the coach or GM who took them.
And it gives it gives you the leeway to take a little bit of a bigger swing on a guy in the first round, right? To really say, hey, if you get a big hit, you got high ceiling, low floor, kind of risky guy, you get that high ceiling out of it, you've got a guy for cheap, really.
And look at what the Lions said. They took a 20-year-old left tackle who's going to play right tackle, who hadn't played football in over a year, who has some alarming similarities to Greg Robinson coming out of Auburn. I know people don't want to hear that, but it's true. Watch the tape. This is a swing. Penei Sewell is not a sure bet by any stretch of the imagination, but his ceiling is sky high, like higher than any lineman that's come into the league in a while, higher than any of them last year.
Yep.
I don't think he's going to be the best of that group. I think Tristan Wirfs is really, really freaking good. Yeah. And I'm happy that I had him tackle number one last year, but Sewell has a chance to be a great NFL player.
Yep.
But if you're worried that it's not going to work, if you're worried that, oh my God, that God, there is a lot of Greg Robinson here. You know, you can get out of it after a couple of years and somebody else will take a shot at it again, because he's so young, because he's so precocious. You know, if it's not working for you, it will try to work for somebody else. So you will get something back in return for it. That didn't used to happen at all. And that's a very good thing for the players and also the coaching staffs and the GMs that try to select these players that have Cincinnati's doing the same thing with Ja'Marr Chase. Phenomenal wide receiver for 1 year in college.
Yeah.
Young guy. Didn't exactly set the world on fire before that and took the last year off.
Yep.
You're more willing to take risks on guys like that specifically under this new CBA than you know when you're stuck with Greg Robinson. Well, Greg Robinson was after the bonus babies, but Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great one.
You're stuck. The Raiders were stuck with him for I think 4 years.
Yep.
You don't have that problem anymore.
Hodges said it in the chat. A quarterback bust now means all you do is you say
you've had enough of that shit
and draft another one next year. Move on. You just keep rolling.
Yep.
Other thing about minicamp, and this is a little bit back to the previous topic, and it's Hodges again. Hodges.
I like Mike.
I do too. This might not seem like much, but I really liked a rookie calling Chris Spielman, Coach Spielman, and taking his ideas out on the field. And that's one thing I want to, you see Dorsey out there. You see Spielman out there. You see Holmes out there. You see Campbell out there. You see, this is truly a team effort. We talked about,
Sheila was out there too. She stayed off camera, but she was out there.
We talked about this early when everyone was flipping out and freaking about, but who's in charge? It's Rod Wood making all the decisions. Oh my God. And he was out there too. People were absolutely flipping their lids over who's in charge and oh my God. Right. And the reality is
they were locked onto some bad crap there.
We had the whole thing broken down for people right away about servant leadership and working as a team and all that sort of thing and helping people to be their best by you being your best. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it play out. Will this win? We talked about it last week. Probably not a lot this year, but it is absolutely a winning strategy for the nearer term than the near term or the longer term than the near term, something like that. This is working really well. Everything we see them doing right now has been working really, really well and has been very good, smart moves. I love it, Riz. I like what this the staff is doing.
I do too. I could live without the Dan Campbell needing a lion because I don't like getting press releases from PETA, which I did.
That's always a risk.
Although, to PETA's credit, they played it very well. Yeah. And I thought Dan Campbell's response to that was also very good.
Yeah,
You know, he's playing the role of the lunkhead. And it's...
And he's no lunkhead. Don't be fooled.
Don't be fooled by that. I really, really want to think he's in on it. And I think he is.
Yeah.
But he's one of those dudes like, so I'm terrible at like telling when people are like being, you know, like when they're going yanking your chain to go with the thing. I'm not good at I don't have that good BS detector, like if they're like snowing me or something. Dan Campbell, I absolutely have no vibe. Like, is he serious? Does he really want a lion? Like, I'm like, I don't know, man.
I think honestly, he was putting it out there. If someone showed up with one, he'd look at, wow, that's pretty cool, man. I really think that's the response. Yeah. Like, he'd think it was great. I don't think he's gonna go out and get one, but I think he'd be down if someone rolled up with a lion on a chain, right? I mean, I don't.
Yeah, and I appreciate all the people that were on Twitter and in our Patreon Slack, who have mentioned that. Maybe the Detroit Zoo should capitalize on this a little bit, you know, get in on that. Yeah. And it is just kind of weird that your mascot is a lion and you don't do anything with the zoo.
Yeah.
And it's not that far away. I mean, it's straight up Woodward, like
Southfield,
what, right? 12 miles. Yeah. Yeah. I think Southfield, it's 11 mile in Woodward, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Woodward and 696. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Somewhere out there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really, really good point. Good point. So, okay. Rookie pay scale is consequential. We got Panay. We got a great team. We got great leadership on the field. Minicamp came off well.
It did.
I feel like everything there looked really good. I really want to tell you, the next one, and this is the kind of thing, you know, we're going to talk about the coach presser. But I want to, and we'll have a little announcement after that. But, I got to say, coaches, before they do this, to a man, they head over to cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. They get themselves hooked up because at Dungeon of Doom, they know who they're dealing with. They knew who they're dealing with in that press room. That's why they let the good guys go first while the gummies are working. They get Justin going, right? They let the gummies work, and then the last guy to usually go is they're feeling it full, and they can kind of deal with his crap. We talked about him last week. But what do? They go to cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. They do one of two things. If they've just got some pain, anxiety, or insomnia, they'll go get the normal stuff. But if they really need to feel that buzz, they need to pop off a little bit, they go and get the chill or the extreme chill line. And they know to eat just one, so that they don't lose a couple hours and they're still fully coherent for their press conference. Head on over to cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. If you have pain, anxiety, or insomnia, you can take care of those things almost immediately with the great stuff they have over there. And I'll just say, beyond the gummies, I keep this for aches and pains and stuff. This cream here, like I said earlier, I'm a Peloton guy. Even though it's nice on the knees, it's nice to have a little relief for those knees during the day. I'll just tell you that. All right. cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. We get a little cut of that. Use coupon code LIONS. Oh, I almost forgot. LIONS is your coupon code to get 55% off everything over there.
Right. And hey, Father's Day is coming up. If you're looking for a good Father's Day gift, you can do that, or you can also go to detroitlionspodcast.com and go to Fanatics and click on the link there.
Yeah. Thank you. You're so good, Riz. Also, actually, that's really big, the Father's Day thing. Just know, depending on where you're at, I always want to put this in here for you guys because I don't want people to get caught out. The regular CBD stuff is great. It's awesome. It's all legal in all 50 states, but that stuff is good. You can run a forklift if you use it. You still get all the relief that you were looking for. You can do all those kinds of things. It won't trip a drug test. The chill line and the extreme chill line, it's kind of a loophole. So it works, and that's why you get the buzz off of it, but you will trip a drug test. Even though it isn't weed or the stuff that, you know, makes the illegal in 42 states or whatever it is, stuff
it's works. The inactive ingredients of weed, but there's enough of it that it will trip your test.
Yeah. So just be good. If you're getting that for dad and dad has to do some tests, don't get him the bad stuff and put him in a bad way. That's nothing to do for a guy for Father's Day. Okay. So we've got our coaches. They're all CBD'd up. They're happy to go, and they hopped in. And I'll say mine, but I think you're on board here. Favorite coach, Hank Fraley, or when he's incognito, Frank Haley. so people don't know who it is. He's got his Clark Kent glasses on. He came up and had a great conversation about the offensive line. I love this guy. I just love him to death.
Yes. Yes. He's a great coach. We're blessed to keep him because the Pittsburgh Steelers really, really wanted him.
Inches away.
And I have learned more about their pursuit of him. Mm-hmm. They really wanted him.
And the Lions waited to the last minute. That was one that really I was a little bit unhappy, but I think the fact that he was able to test the market the way he did actually helped him out more in the long run. So
I agree. Oh. So he talked about a couple of linemen. We'll start with Big V. Because he was asked, and I forget who asked it. I was not actually on these press conferences. I was running my son and daughter to various basketball practices across the greater Grand Rapids area. So I missed it. He was asked about Big V's future. And I don't have the exact quote. I will paraphrase again. But he's like, why wouldn't we have a future for Big V? Like, this guy is a really good football player. Like, he was taken aback that there's question that he's not going to be the starting right guard. Like, so for those of you who are doing your depth charts at home, he's your starting right guard, period, end of conversation. Like, they're bullish on what Big V offers. And, you know, we can certainly question that. He was not good last year. He was also not healthy last year. He was also changing positions, changing offensive line schemes, offensive line coaches. He had never been really trusted to do anything permanent full time when he was in Philadelphia. This guy was a tackle at TCU who didn't really find a home there until like late in his career. He moved around a lot. He was Philadelphia's sixth lineman. He played at least 150 snaps at four different positions while he was in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So asking him to find his spot, and it was pretty clear that Tyrell Crosby, who we'll get to in a second, was better than him at right tackle. Mm-hmm. So they made the choice to try to put him at right guard. With the injury that he had, it impacted his ability to play guard severely. So, look, I don't know if it's going to work, but they're absolutely going to try to make it work, and I appreciate that. I'm glad that they didn't panic and eat the $45 million.
Yeah,
he's due, I think, $9.5 million this year.
Yeah,
try to make it work. If it doesn't work, then you move on from it. But they're not just throwing him away after one injury-plagued year under a bad coaching staff. And I don't mean that as a shot against Darrell Bevell or Hank Fraley or anything, but come on. We know what's up.
Yeah. Well, and look, I'll tell you, if Frank's behind him, then I you know, faith in Fraley. I'm telling you straight up, just what he has been able
to do.
He's
a really good coach.
And here's the risk. I'm telling you, with this crew of guys that we have right now and the level, I mean, look at the talent we have on offensive line, the level they're going to play at, he's going to be at a real risk to be a loss for the team. And we've talked about that. And that's one of the things they talked about also.
Hiring guys who can get hired elsewhere.
Yeah. So it's going to be either you promote him or he's going to go somewhere else, because he's a very, very talented guy. If anybody can make Big V work in this scheme, I would put Hank at I want to do his alter ego now. I would put Hank at the front of the list all day long. All day long.
Agree.
And he's so good.
And the fact that he's going to be your worst offensive lineman, and you know that going in, I think that gives him and I know Big V a little bit from hanging out with him at the Shrine. It was still a Shrine game back then.
Yep.
He's a guy who's going to take that personally and be like, I'm not the worst guy here. Screw you, dude. I'm putting these dudes on their asses and going after this. That's the kind of mentality that he is. That's why he was coveted. That's why the Lions paid so much to bring him in. We did not see that guy last year. I'm praying to God that we see him this year, because that guy helps this team.
Yeah.
And that would be very nice.
Yeah.
So the other one was Tyrell Crosby, and Hank was asked about Tyrell, and he acknowledged that there are trade rumors. He acknowledged that he has talked to Tyrell about those trade rumors
privately.
Yes.
And he said that for a reason, right? That
he did
talk about it. Right.
Yeah. But it acknowledges the fact that that Tyrell has a lot of balls in his court that he needs to hit correctly. Mm-hmm. And to use a tennis analogy, to return over the net properly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they are not they're not as with Big V, they're not giving up on him, but they are also letting him know that he's got to perform to a certain level. Otherwise they will. And I, without saying it, Hank said that today.
did he, God, how do I put this? Will he ride out the tough times after maybe not riding out the tough times previous, right? I mean, I don't know about that. Well, that's the question. That's the open question. Right. Those are the balls that he has to hit and build that kind of confidence that he's going to do it. Great player. The guy is, we've talked about him a number of times, is how his abilities have risen far beyond what we thought he was.
This guy was a fifth round draft pick, and he outplayed that draft status. And look, was he a good starting right tackle? No, but he's capable.
Yeah.
He's better than some starting right tackles on some playoff teams last year. He's not the reason why this team was awful. Yeah. Certainly not.
Yep, there you go.
And the fact that he's still here now, that he didn't get traded on draft weekend, I think speaks to the fact that they do see something in him still. And I think Fraley, again without saying it, said it, like, we're a better team with Tyrell Crosby than without him.
Yep.
But he's got to make sure that stays the case.
Yep. I my take was that there was just no trades in the offing on
I agree with that.
Work with that. I think given the right deal, I think they'll pull the trigger on it. That's my, right. You know, it's
now see the, so there's another dynamic here. Washington is trying to trade Morgan Moses, who is their starting right tackle, who's probably, he's not that much better than Tyrell, but I think his ceiling is a little bit higher, or his floor is a little bit higher than what Tyrell's is. Because bad Tyrell Crosby is not good at right tackle.
No,
but he doesn't play that level very often. He's a sufficiently effective starting right tackle, but there are a couple of players out there now who are better than him, who are on the market as well. And I think that might have something to do with the reason why the Lions are keeping him as well. Mm-hmm. When you can only get a, there was a trade night. Oh God, I forget who, Mike Hughes from the Vikings, former first round pick. They traded him to the Chiefs with a seventh round pick for a sixth round pick. That's the kind of deal that you would expect to get from Tyrell Crosby right now. If you wait until this summer when, let's say, the Tennessee Titans lose their starting right tackle, or the Los Angeles Rams get hit with some adversity, then that market will go up. And that does it happens every year.
And
injuries in preseason, there's going to be three preseason games this year. They are going to play them. Injuries will happen. It's unfortunate. I hate it, but that's part of the game. And keeping him now gives you better trade value later.
Yep. And normally, you don't want to trade away your backup right tackle during the season, so your risk is higher at that time. But as we broke out the season and what the win-loss totals look like last week, it's not as much of a risk for this team to make a move like that. So again, if you play this out, you know, the chessboard a little further, it makes a lot of sense to take it to that time and have that value. And worst case, you have somebody who can start for you.
Right. And he will absolutely not be here in 2022.
I will tell you though, one thing, and this is, you know, I make fun, Riz, and you know, I'm just yanking your chain when I say this journalism stuff is easy. The hardest part about it is when you know stuff and you have to talk around it so you don't burn your people. That's so frippin' hard. Okay. So what I will say though about the line and everything to do with that line,
he ain't gonna be here in 2022, folks. No matter what happens, he ain't gonna be here.
Yeah. But beyond that though, as a group, and I think we're seeing. I'm gonna compare it a little bit to Anwazurike.
Yes, I was saying it wrong last week too, and thankfully. And I got to give credit to my guy, Paul from Otsego, who used to call into 96.1 all the time. He corrected me on it. Thank you, dude.
Yep. Anzurike and Aleem McNeil. Those guys getting along the way they did is, number one, they're already an upgrade on the defensive line. But number two, they're getting along means a lot because they're going to play next to each other a lot. They're going to see each other out in the field and have to get together a lot. I mentioned them and that kind of relationship building because you have already that built out on the offensive line between the players, the coaches, the group. Those guys, I will use this word, and I don't use it lightly, they love each other. They have
they
each other's back.
They absolutely
they
do.
They are a unit, the unit, right?
And Panay fits in with that unit.
Yep.
Which is why I'm less worried that he will be a Greg Robinson redo.
Yeah.
Because physically, they're the same dude. But mentally, I think I have a lot less worries about Panay than I do about Greg Robinson. I had those worries about Greg Robinson back in the day. The fact that he's now in federal prison says a lot about his character and his work ethic. I don't see that problem being there at all for Panay Sewell.
This is a testament to when building or drafting and signing character players works.
Yes.
When working and building around character actually works. So many times you're like, if we could just sign, whatever, the guy that...
Jonathan Hankins!
Yeah, Hankins. I don't want to... I was trying not to say names, but whatever. Either way. You could sign these guys and you could do so much better.
Micah Parsons.
Maybe, but this is great.
Reuben Foster.
This is absolutely great, this group. This is a long-haul kind of crew. You saw Ragnow sign. You saw Decker sign. You saw Decker going hard for the guys and the people that he loves on the team in the offseason here. And work and going with what changed that he didn't go with what he wanted and did go with what he wanted, right? But because he's a team player first, but he's not afraid to be able to speak with the office. I love to see this kind of group of guys. And that's the kind of group of guys. I don't care who your quarterback is. Jared Goff's life has improved 15-fold because of those five guys in front of him. Absolutely, unquestionably. And that difference between the line here and the lines he had in LA will make him a different quarterback. I think he will be a different quarterback than what people have seen. And I think he's going to surprise some people this year. Again, we're not going to see the massive wins, right? But I think we're going to see some plays that we didn't expect. And I think we're going to see some good stuff about this team and a foundation that builds in a way that we haven't seen. And just some fun frippin' football. Some fun football, finally.
I said this on a podcast I was on with our lads, courtesy of Dan Shanka. Wasn't on with Dan. I was on with Greg, his Dan assistant. Rocks. But Dan was great. Dan was great. Watch that show again, folks. That was a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I said on there was that this team is built around, they're not going to be fun to play, specifically the offensive and defensive lines. They got some dudes, man, to hearken to our Slack chat. There's some dudes on both sides of the line of scrimmage right now that are going to be problems for the other team to play against. They don't have enough of them in enough spots. But they have enough that this is not going to be teams that overlook Detroit this year, that they're going to get punched in the mouth.
Yep.
And if they don't have the ability to the resiliency to handle that, Detroit will beat them. I have very little doubt about that.
Yep.
Even if they don't have the talent at the perimeter positions, and they don't, that other teams do, the ability to control the line of scrimmage and control the middle of the field is something that's very big. It's something that even as Drew Brees' ability to throw the ball declined and his receiving core declined around him, because they were still that team on defense, specifically with guys like Cam Jordan and Alex Anzalone, who's here now. The fact that those two were at the Senior Bowl together and I didn't confuse them once that week is a huge win in my life. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I love that play. I love that play.
Yeah, but they had some dudes in New Orleans on defense. They don't get enough credit for it. And on their offensive line as well. That was a team that invested a lot. Guys like Terron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk and Max Unger that they traded for a while. They had dudes on their offensive and defensive lines that even when it wasn't working on the perimeter, when guys like Patrick Robinson flopped miserably at cornerback, they were still able to get by because they could control the middle of the field. I see that blueprint specifically on the defensive side of the ball with this team, with adding Aleem and Levi and Derek Barnes behind them and signing Anzalone. This team got a lot better within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage in the middle of the field.
And it was miserable before that. I mean, it was hard not to, but these are still moves that are high quality moves that got them significantly better versus kind of like patchwork. Hopefully this is going to work out stuff. I see Work Your Dollar. I swear, I feel like it's Wisco. I really do. I don't know why. But I see Work Your Dollar in there, and he's like, we got dudes. Please explain. I'll tell you, we have a great video by Ash on our YouTube channel called Dude Theory. And you'll see the dude from the Big Lebowski on the thumbnail, so you can't miss it. It goes Jeffrey. Through what dude theory is. And I think it's a pretty interesting. We came up with it in the Slack, and it's a pretty cool kind of theory about what a team needs to be a winner, and dudes is a big component of it. That's why it's named Dude Theory. But I think that'll help you out. It's a good one.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. And Ash does a fantastic job. Yep. So always check out Ash's content. I love that guy.
So we're going to get into some of his content right here. We will do an episode on who the dudes are after the camps are over. We're going to do a full roster run. So check in on that. We'll rock that out. We got a schedule to keep, though. All right. I want to get into really quick. Great article from Ash talking about why this Detroit Lions UDFA class looks more promising than usual. And I want to just take one key part out of it that I think people don't understand. And they write off UDFAs all the time. But before I do that, I'm going to tease what we got coming next week. We've got undrafted free agent cornerback out of Arkansas, Jerry Jacobs, coming in. He's going to come in and he's going to talk about rookie minicamp. He's going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff going on so far in his journey. But we've done more than that. We've signed him up, and we kind of based it on the concept of Hard Knocks thinking and the storyline that you see there. And we're calling it Journey to the 53. He's agreed to come on regularly throughout the year, throughout the preseason, the regular season, you know, and so on, to talk about his journey. Whether or not he's with the Lions or not, he's going to continue to come back and talk about the life of a UDFA, maybe a practice squad player, maybe a guy who makes the 53. But it's called Journey to the 53, and we're going to have him on regularly so you can get a player's perspective, what it's like, because you're a guy who's made it to the NFL, but on that edge, on that bubble of making it to the NFL. Yeah. And it's an interesting story.
And he's had a path.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's had a very interesting path to where he's at now. And his path might diverge again in Detroit because he's one of those guys that, is he a cornerback? Is he a safety? I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he knows yet, honestly.
Yeah. there's some options. So yeah. It's really going to be cool. It's going to be great. Journey to 53.
And he can talk.
Yeah, he can. And so we got that set up. We're looking for that next week. And he'll be on live with us. And like I said, he'll be back regularly. I just think this, and we have a couple other things that we're working on in this offseason as well. These stories that don't really get told. You'll see right around cut time, somebody will do a story about, hey, you know, these are all guys and this is their jobs that you're hearing about. Don't be cruel when they're cut. That guy. And then everyone forgets about it a week later. And it's true. It's absolutely true. But it's like it's on their calendar to do that tweet and that article. And then they don't talk about it again. What I want to get to and what we're doing with these couple of series of these people that we're talking to is talk about parts of the league and parts of the business that you don't get to see and you don't hear about only in these little pieces that they do along the way. Yeah. We're going to take that journey with these folks, and I think you guys are really, really going to like it, and I think it's going to build out some of when players talk about, you know, you guys don't know what it's like. This will fill out a whole lot of what it's like for a lot of players.
Yeah, that'll help inform you on what it's more like. You'll have a better idea of what they're actually talking about when they're saying, you really don't know. You think you know, but you don't know. You'll have a better idea of what you don't know.
Yep.
And we will too. Chris and I will learn that as well. Because we don't, we were not NFL players, unfortunately. Right.
I mean, you'd think so with these great builds, but I'll take that and I'm going to lead into this this story that Ash wrote, which is absolutely fabulous because it's going to tie directly to this one of the premises he puts in this thing. First round picks, and you guys are going to know this. You're going to say no shite at the very beginning. First round picks comprise the largest percentage of the NFL's players. Period. Right. Even with Greg Robinsons of the world, right? They tend to bounce around making a couple million a season, doing their thing, right?
He did that.
Yeah, for sure.
He was in Detroit. He wound up in Cleveland. Now he's in the camp.
Now, what's the second largest percentage group in the league? Is it second round picks?
You think it's second round picks, but I happen to know this answer. No. It ain't second round picks.
It's undrafted players. Think about that now. Okay, you talk about how great your GM is and all these other GMs are second, third, fourth round, fifth round, sixth round, seventh round. There's fewer of them as a success rate than there are with undrafted free agents. Only first round picks hit more than UDFAs in this league. How important does that make the UDFAs and their journey into this
league? They are your budget signings. They are how you can afford to have a massive contract on your quarterback or your defensive tackle or something. They make it affordable. If you have UDFAs that can play, Chris, it's a monumental thing.
Yep.
It really is.
Yep.
And who's the best UDFA on the Lions right now? Mike Ford? Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe Jason Kabinda. I mean, Jack Fox, I guess he's great. So
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the guys we picked up this year, but sorry.
But this year, Sage. There's a lot of guys that can. There are three guys that I have in mind who I think will make this team, and not only make the team, I think one of them has a chance to play a lot.
Yep.
And I'll drop that later, but there were guys who chose specifically to come to Detroit for the opportunities that the Lions and the state of the roster that they give offer them. And that's one of the reasons why UDFAs hit is because agents figure that out pretty quickly. Like, oh, this team, God, look at their wide receiver depth chart. God, they're awful. Yeah. Go there. maybe take $5,000 less and go there, Jonathan Adams. And Jonathan Adams says, yes, I will do that because I can be the next Kenny Golladay.
Exactly.
And he might not be wrong.
Yeah. Well, so check it out. It's DetroitLionsPodcast.com. And the article is from Ash, Why This Detroit Lions UDFA Class Looks More Promising Than Usual. One of the other pieces that goes into this is every year, like the last couple of years, Bob Quinn filled our roster with signings of just marginal older players.
Desmond Trufant, Jesse James, the list goes on.
And knowing that those are some of the lowest percentage players.
Kenny Wiggins,
Adrian
Peterson,
this almost free lottery pick of players that make up the majority of rosters behind first round picks. It's like, why wouldn't you load up? You talk about
Chase Daniel,
what Brad Holmes did and changed. This is huge, and why we didn't sign a bunch of people ahead of time. And with the space available on the roster, what it gives us, the opportunity this gives us, this is a completely different way of doing things than what Lions fans are used to, and the results. I mean, some of these guys, Sage Sherratt, I think he's going to be, kind of special out there. Is really going to be interesting as to see how this plays out. It's a whole new ball of wax for us.
It is. And it's a more affordable ball of wax too. And that's something that this team is not in a position now to sign premium free agents. Next summer, they might be.
Yeah.
The summer after that, they dang well better be. But having guys like Jonathan Adams, Sage Surratt, Javon McKinley, Rakeem Boyd, who has a real shot to make this team as an undrafted running back, although he doesn't play special teams, and that's a big deal.
Yep.
If you're going to be the number four running back, you absolutely have to kill it on special teams. That's why Jason Huntley is in Philadelphia now. That's why Ty Johnson is in Philadelphia now. That's why a lot of guys move on. If you're a third or a fourth string running back and you're not getting regular reps on offense, you have to be great on special teams. That's where Rakeem Boyd is going to earn hit. Somebody asked me about that earlier today, and I forget who said it. They asked you on Twitter to ask me that. That's my answer for that. He will make the team or not on special teams.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All right. I want to, with that, from there, we talk about what they might be able to sign next year. We had, Albert Breer. Had a little brain freeze there. Albert Breer posted this morning the teams with the most cap space as of this morning, right? And things are going to happen and so on. But don't forget
They signed Sewell today, so that does change the dynamic here.
But don't forget about how much dead cap we have also that's going to pop open next year, right? The Lions are number five in cap space with $21 million, number five in the league. Now think about this, what we've added this year, the capital we have in the draft next year, and the amount of money we look to have to spend next year.
Right.
The one thing I have to give Bob Quinn is he didn't absolutely burn the place down on the way out.
He had a very good understanding of how to financially responsibly build a team. He deserves credit for that. Yeah. He does.
Just not from a skill standpoint. or a talent standpoint. But from finances, he had that locked.
I mean, yes, he overpaid for Jesse James and Chase Daniel and Big V. But by and large, he was pretty good at managing the cap and not crippling the franchise with god awful signings. Okay. I mean, as much as I've moaned about Chase Daniel, they got rid of him this year and it wasn't a huge deal.
Or was it Mike Disner? And that's the talent side. Well, saw Quinn.
That's certainly that's the sunny side of life right there.
We may know or we may never know. We'll leave it at that.
Right. I'll use Adrian Peterson example here. I think we all like Adrian Peterson. I think we like what he did for Detroit last year. They could have gotten a guy who made 1/10 of what Adrian Peterson did. Or 2/10 of, that'd be 1/5. I can reduce fractions of what he did and get the same basic outcome. I think this regime has a better grasp of that than what Bob Quinn did.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I don't want to disparage Adrian Peterson because he was very good. He's specifically very good for DeAndre Swift. I think, and DeAndre will tell you that, but I learned a ton from having this guy around. And I don't begrudge the Lions for going after Adrian Peterson because they thought that they were going to be good. And a lot of us thought they were going to be good as well.
Yeah.
But
boy, there was a turn last year in the media when nobody could go to training camp and see what was really happening. Everybody seemed to turn. Wow, this team is surprisingly good. All of a sudden, like the narrative for like 2 weeks before the season just flipped and everybody flipped on it. I mean, everybody, even some of the most down people in the world, right, that are kind of get themselves locked on stuff or whatever else, were just like, woo, this is going to be great. And it's like, really? Is this what really happening? Is this turning around?
So a bad team or a team that knows it's not going to be competing for the playoffs. And as much as I know a lot of you want to drink the Kool-Aid, this team is not competing for the playoffs this year. I'm sorry, they're not. Mm-hmm. If it happens, phenomenal. That's great. They're way the heck ahead of schedule. Don't expect it. And a team that is in that situation doesn't sign Adrian Peterson. They sign Rakeem Boyd.
Yep. Enjoy the return of fun football to Detroit, because I can guarantee that the football, the product in the field, is going to be a heck of a lot of fun. It's going to be really exciting. It's going to be a whole lot of great stuff. The W's might not be there. We'll eat those next year. Just enjoy what we got this year, because it's 110% better than everything.
The team is going up, and as I said on the Arles podcast, the teams that are above them, they're not going up.
Yeah. Point.
Especially the one that's across Lake Michigan from me. Well, actually, technically two of them are. The one that's north from me, which is that way.
The one that's got mold growing on their uniforms. That's how they got their.
Yeah, they're not getting better. Even if number 12 stays there, so the Lions could be capitalizing at a time where Green Bay is going down. Minnesota, I have no idea what to make of the Minnesota Vikings this year. I really don't. I will hopefully figure that out at some point before this summer.
I feel like this is their last best chance this year.
I can buy that. I can also see them, if the draft picks that they had worked and if a couple of the moves that they made work, they can be good. They can sustain it. Chicago is going to be, I think they're going to be good this year. Whether or not Justin Fields plays or not, because I actually do like Andy Dalton for them a little bit.
Yeah, he's the best quarterback they've had in ages.
I think this is their defense's last stand, and I think that their defense is going to fall off precipitously after this year, and it might fall off this year. Yeah. So the Lions, as they rise, will be catching teams that are going down.
Yeah,
and that's a very good way to balance things. If you follow what the Buffalo Bills have done, they've done that masterfully. They timed their rise perfectly for when the Patriots were going to fall.
What's a little frustrating with the schedule of playing all our division rivals up front is if you see a team like, okay, so Green Bay falls apart, the wheels come off. Because if they come off early, things start going bad, that thing is going to be a dumpster fire before anyone realizes what happens, because nobody knows how to deal with it. Nobody there knows how to deal with failure. And if it starts happening and they can't stop it, it's going to be really bad really fast. for them. I mean, for me, it'll be, yes. I'll get out my marshmallows.
It'll be very nice. I'll get the marshmallows. Schadenfreude will be in full effect, baby.
What I think, and to your point about Chicago, is if this is the year they fall off, they're going to fall off as the year progresses. Injury's going to hit. The age of these guys and the length of the season, especially in an extra game, is going to play out. I would love to stack my games at the end of the season against these guys, because I think feel like we're a team, you know, with as youthful as we are in some of the key places, that could take that step past them, like you're talking about, as the season wears on them.
Yeah, and this is a team that has built itself in the mold of its head coach, Dan Campbell. What do we know about Dan Campbell from when he played here? What do we know about him from when he coached in Miami? What do we know about the New Orleans Saints, who were very good about this, and that's where he and Aaron Glenn came from? They play every snap of every game like it's the final play of the Super Bowl.
Yep.
That's one of the reasons why those Saints teams, even though they haven't been as talented, are still really damn good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that you better believe that that's coming. That's the kneecap biting mentality right there. And I like the idea that this team will steal games late, because there are going to be other teams that are like, I don't have the schedule in front of me, but let's say they're playing a team that's 5-10 mm-hmm. in week 17. That team's going to be like, and expected to be a playoff team.
Yeah.
The Lions are beating that team. I guarantee that. Because they're not quitting. They're not going to be that team.
You're talking about the Green Bay Packers is what you're talking about.
Good stuff.
All right. Really fun. Hey, really quick for all the folks here, we really, really appreciate it. We don't do this big ask thing, but if you could hit the like button and the subscribe button and the bell, it really helps us with YouTube's algorithm. You know how they do their thing and all that. It helps us out a great deal if you can do that. So just want to ask you guys to do that real quick on the YouTube stream. Hit the like, hit the subscribe and the bell. And we appreciate that. All right. I want to talk about Matthew Stafford. He did a really good interview. Let me pop this the other way. Sam Farmer did a really good interview with Matthew Stafford. I got to talk a bit with Sam when I lived in LA. We had a couple shots where he was going to be on the podcast, but things didn't quite work out. He is one of the most wonderful individuals. I used to listen to him on the radio on the morning show on the way to work once a week. He was just so thoughtful and really, truly, you know, people claim to be insiders. He talks to everybody in the league. He may live in LA and work for the LA Times. He talks to everyone. He knows more. He's
a former president of the Pro Football Writers Association. He is still very active in mentoring a lot of people. He's a great human being, aside from being an incredible reporter. Nothing but good things to say about Sam Farmer.
Yep. So he did a spectacular interview with Matthew Stafford. And I have to give Matthew a lot of credit, because he's in hype mode in LA right now. His job is to hype up the locals, the team. I'm the guy. This is the year. Buy season ticket. You know, the whole thing. Get my jersey. All that stuff.
Right. Because you can attest to this from living there, and they've got that beautiful new stadium. Ooh. Unless they're winning Super Bowls, nobody cares.
Yeah. So this is the year I moved there was the first year the Anaheim Ducks won the Stanley Cup. Okay, and it happened like a month and a half after I moved there. This was when Hockey Town was just screaming still, right? Detroit was all hockey all the time. It was like when the news came on, when they won the cup, it was like the sixth story after women's Hialeah, right? I mean, they just did not, it was not on the radar. Hockey was not a thing for them, right? It was like, what in the world? Look up.
Anaheim has a team?
The only reason I know what Hialeah is from the old Pong game. But yeah, I know, right? But it was like nothing. They didn't care. The thing about LA is if they're not winning, the folks aren't there and they're not reading about it. They're not listening to it. There's nothing going on. They've got plenty to do. You can be outside 360 out of 365 days a year doing something and having fun, and you know, the nightlife, the day life, the midnight life, everything going on is there's tons
going to the rainbow
to do. Yeah, tons to do. You don't need those distractions of those teams. They have to fight for eyeballs in there. And this whole thing right now is a huge push. This is a, you know, the Rams, it's an interesting marketing story. Somebody somewhere is going to do an NBA set of white papers in about 5 or 10 years about the marketing story moving the Rams back to LA, because they've run a fabulous show there. They've done a really, really good job capitalizing on Hard Knocks. What was the one on Amazon? I forget the name of that one. And
yes,
Yeah. And everything leading up to this point. Now they have Matthew Stafford. They get to rewrite the story. They're going to have good 2 years going there. It's going to be excellent. With all that going on, though, and all that kind of pressure to really pump the team and everything else, and he did. He sold the Rams. Who's there.
He did.
He sold the Lions just as hard. And I want, just on the side note, just because I laugh, having lived in California, and I'm glad I left now. It's a great place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there anymore. Watching Kelly Stafford post and complain about the paper straws just cracked me up. Just like broke me. It was so funny because those things, they're garbage. But anyway, them like going there on their own and then starting to experience like, oh God, the daily life stuff that you don't think about, right? It's funny because there are so many little things that poke you in the eye throughout the day.
Anyway, it's a different world.
Yeah. Anyway, so having him go there and having them go through everything and do everything they do and turn around and still speak so highly about the team, that says a lot about his character.
He had nothing but good things to say about Martha, about Sheila, about Rod, about the organization, about how they handled the fact that he realized that he didn't want to be here anymore. And one of the things that I took away from it was how willing this staff was, that was brand new and didn't really know him, was to work with him and make him happy and put him in the best situation because he deserved it for all that he'd done for Detroit. And he clearly appreciates that.
I'm going to put 10-1 odds out there right now that Matthew Stafford signs a 1-day contract and retires a Detroit Lion, no matter what happens. And
I would absolutely buy that. Unless he's winning a lot in Los Angeles.
Right. Well,
we'll see what happens with that. I really, really, truly hope he wins at least 2 playoff games in 1 year once.
Next year, in 2022, I want next year's draft pick to be over the top, and then he.
We got that one too. So
I know, but we'll have used it properly then. Sam asked him about Rich Gannon, Carson Palmer, guys that kind of redefined themselves after what was a tough spot. Great spot for him to come in and take digs at Detroit. Right, and he also brought up Tom Brady, or Matthew brought up Tom Brady in that scenario, and he's like, "No, it just inspires me that there's a chance for me to go and do this as well." Didn't take digs, didn't do it. I love it.
He didn't say anything negative about Matt Patricia. He didn't say anything about Bob Quinn, at least not on the record. And that speaks to the kind of guy. Look, Matthew Stafford is a smart guy. He is a guarded guy when he's on the record.
Yep.
I do think that came across in the Farmer interview as well.
Oh yeah. 100%.
But he wouldn't have written, this is an LA reporter, he wouldn't have written all that about the Lions if it wasn't like something that Matthew stressed.
Yep. Yeah, 100%.
And I think that's where that's what I took from it, was that Matthew wanted it to be a big deal that the Lions treated him right on the way out. And he made it a point of emphasis to Farmer when they were talking. Yep. And Farmer picked up on that. And that's why he included a lot of that in the story.
I'm going to glance past the Farmer underhanded softball pitch about Clayton Kershaw. I want to talk about the Archie.
So let me tell you this. I talked to our Rams Wire editor, Candace Silva, today. He's like, I'm already sick of this. I had no idea. I'm like, dude, you don't even know.
Oh man, it's great.
Sorry, Cam.
I want to talk about I hadn't caught this before. The Archie Manning, the quarterback camp at Manning.
I didn't know that story either. That's really cool.
Went there. He got there early because that's who Matthew Stafford is, right? He got to throw with the Mannings. He's young, right? He thinks, holy cow, with everything these guys did, he's just blown away.
So at that point, he was 17 years old.
Yeah. Blown away being able to throw with these guys. And then he winds up stuck in the airport. His flight's delayed. He's trying to get back to Atlanta. There's a bunch of storms, the whole thing. Somehow the Mannings find out. Archie Manning finds out and says, come on, be our guest for dinner. Come with us. Take Matthew out of the airport.
Can you imagine that?
Haul him as was Peyton's wife, wasn't right? He was Peyton's date.
Yeah.
To
he was Peyton's date.
And it gave him a real sense of respect and what respect is and how to treat people. And I think they did it with a guy who really can understand that. Who can really appreciate people who treat you that way and can learn, you know what, this is something that it's a character builder for him too, that it's something that he would emulate going on. I think it shows itself in who he is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you're not going to hear, look, I will criticize some of the things that Matthew Stafford did on the field, off the field, this guy was nails, man. He was everything you could want from your franchise quarterback.
Yep.
Off the field and in the locker room and in the media room and in dealing with us off the record in the media room, which is something that I know Justin Rogers had mentioned today.
Yep.
And I had extraordinarily limited time with Matthew Stafford read once, where we were off the record in private. And he was great.
I had 3 minutes with him once.
That's about what I got. Yeah,
yeah. A couple things talks about his family being a support system. And that's something that, I mean, the family, that Stafford family, a lot of really great character there amongst all of them. I mean,
and you know, Kelly takes a lot of crap and she's vocal. She's clearly the co-driver of their relationship. It's not a situation where, mm-hmm. you know, she's sitting in the background and happy to be, you know, my husband's the quarterback of now the Los Angeles Rams. I'm richer than I ever dreamed of when I was young. This is really cool. I'll just shut up. That ain't Kelly. Yep. And Matthew Stafford likes it that way. And I think it's a very healthy relationship that they have. Yep. She is outspoken and she is going to advocate and try the best for her family, which includes Matthew and their four girls.
Servant leaders of the family, the two of them.
Yeah. I don't always like how Kelly has done things, but that's the way their family works. That's cool.
And it's working for them, right?
And as somebody who, you know, my wife who's over there now in earshot, so I won't say too much, but she rules the roost here. And I get that. And I understand that's our dynamic. So I respect where Matthew is with that.
Good point. And it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. That's the thing. It's every relationship is a trade-off. Every relationship has, you know, you have co-owners, you have owners, you have different things. But if it works for both of you, that's the key. And that's, you know, that's
amen.
That's my...
Got my 25-year anniversary is coming up, baby. Week one.
Yep.
Weekend one of the NFL is my 25th anniversary, so I'm trying to balance that right now.
We cracked 26 this year, or the second week.
Oh, congratulations.
So, yeah, it's you know, when it works really well. So, yeah. All right, the tinkering of the footwork. Just two more little quick things I want to talk about. Nobody really talked about that. That went under the radar here in Detroit as far as
so this number, is something, right? And I have to give Eric Schlitt some credit. He pointed this out a year ago. That Matthew's his feet have changed. He's left foot forward now instead of right foot forward. So in my covering of the Cleveland Browns with Browns Wire, it was a massive deal when Baker Mayfield switched which foot he had forward. Like there was like days devoted on talk radio to this. Oh my God, we're changing Baker. This is awful. What are we doing? And Matthew's like nonchalant about it. Like, yeah, I got better. I learned how to put my left foot forward and it's good.
Yeah.
Like, okay, end of story. Okay.
I got to react to something in the chat here. Ted says Kelly hated Michigan's governor, Gretchen Whitmer. I will tell you, I don't think that's what it was. And I'm going to tell you something that I think.
I would agree with that.
My experience, and I'm projecting here, but I think this is probably where it came off and it was a poor choice of words on her part. I currently live in Florida. We've been open since July. Restaurants have been open. We've been very cautious with how we deal with things. But my son's been in school since September, right? They went back and they did school and they're off and running, right? The Staffords have a place in Georgia. They've visited that. They've traveled around the country. They've seen it. The vast majority of people have not traveled and have not seen anything except their very tight, close world. And they say, oh, this is how it is everywhere. I'm going to tell you, they are absolutely different worlds. Georgia opened early. Like I said, Florida was open. When I came in October, when it looked like things were on the drop, I visited with you, Riz. We went to Miller's, had some burgers.
We did.
I told you then. I was like, holy cow.
You were in shock. Like you were in legit shock.
I felt like I walked in on a funeral. People, and then I came back in at the end of December again, and like all the restaurants are still closed, and you can get takeout, but it's on like the end of a 14-foot wooden pole. They're pushing the bag out the window and stuff, right? I'm like, I was just at a hibachi restaurant, and all the tables were full. They threw little pieces of plexiglass between the different parties around the hibachi grill, but that was it. Right. And I was just like, these are two completely different worlds. Is one right more than the other? I'm not making an argument for or against any of those things. And that's not what I want to talk about. But what happened with Kelly, I think, is not that she hated the governor Whitmer, but that she saw the vast difference. And that's why she said, what was the word she used, was oppressive or dictatorship.
Yeah,
that was it.
Dictatorship. Yeah.
Because it was way different than the other place she was. And she experienced that vast, stark difference. So I think she used, like I said, poor choice of words, but what she was trying to articulate was how different it was being handled and how hard it was. I couldn't imagine doing Michigan versus Florida, right? Again, I talk about, we didn't even go out to eat until September and everything was open, right? We went once because we were ready to hang each other, beat each other up because no one wanted to do the dishes again. No one wanted to cook again, right? It was not, we were like, somebody's going to get hurt if we don't go out to eat, okay? But it was one of those things, right? We were able to do that. When I got to Michigan, you saw, like you said, I was just stunned.
You were shell-shocked. You really were.
Yeah.
The fact that our waitress had two masks on freaked you out.
I will say, there wasn't the whole thing here of people shaming people for wearing masks or yelling at people or anything like that. That wasn't the thing. It was, and this is what surprises me, because Michigan is one of the most libertarian states I've ever been. Like, do whatever you want until you reach my nose, and then your rights stop, right? Because don't mess with my world, but do whatever you want in yours, right? Michigan has always been super libertarian way.
You need to go to Texas, my friend.
Florida is outshone Michigan in that way. It was like, it was nuts. But people respected other people's decisions and what they did and the rules. When there was arrows in the, I mean, I broke the rules in the arrows because the beer I wanted was right at the end of the aisle and I wasn't going to do a full swing. I just grabbed it and went, boom. But you know, whatever. So anyway, yes. I'll get off of that topic. But yeah. I just think that Ted, I think she was just kind of misunderstood and had a different experience than probably 98%.
And I will tell you from my travels with my kids to Kentucky and Indiana to play basketball, it was eye-opening how different it was in those states than Michigan as well. And that framed my point of reference for how I reacted to everything as well. I'll leave it at that.
There you go. Again, I'm not saying one's better than the other. I'm not trying to make an argument for that, but I'm saying
it was clearly different.
Yep, exactly.
and the experiencing it firsthand was very eye-opening.
Yep, exactly.
And enlightening on how you need to perceive what is going on.
And I can see how, especially how passionate she is. I can see her, the word she chose is that reaction, right, to what you saw.
Yeah.
What do you,
she's a passionate person, and she's not going to hold back. That's who Kelly is. That's why Matthew loves her.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. All right.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I think that's one thing we want to talk about is Amazon.DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Go there. Amazon.DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Check that out. You can help. Anything you buy there, they give us a little kickback. You can help the show out by doing something you already do anyway. Also, Fanatics.DetroitLionsPodcast and CBD.DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Last thing I want to talk about is Dan Campbell. This man, I believed it when he said this. And this is the one where you said you can't read him earlier. This is the I really believe. Like, he was like, when they're like, hey, would you, you know, for what was it, for a playoff game or something, they said, would you give up an arm? He's like,
would you give it up? Yeah.
He's like, well, no. He was like, I don't know. He kind of mumbled that they were talking over him. And he's like, no, they clarified. For a Super Bowl in Detroit, would you do it? And he was like, yeah. And then they're like, oh, really? Oh, my God, you heard it here. He's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, he went in again with it and was very, very, I was like, I think he really might. I mean, I think, and look, either way, he understands how important it is to the city, right?
If it's a lion biting the arm off, he's all in.
he's like, wow, okay. And it rose the whole PETA thing like we talked about earlier in the other conversation, but the passion and it's not even the passion, isn't the word, the focus, the absolute commitment when he said, yeah, I would. There was no irony there. There's no laugh. It was like, hell yeah, I would do that. That's how much this means to me. Yeah. I don't know how far off he is. I think probably he'd probably balk at actually giving up the arm, but I think he would get to the point and then say, well, hold on a minute. Are you guys are serious? Like, really? The lion? Yeah. He's looking at the lion.
Put the chainsaw away. This ain't a Scarface remake.
Right. I just, but the fact that he like thought about it and was like, yeah, okay, I'm in. Right. I mean, wow, never would have heard that from either of the previous coaches, right? You would have heard.
God, no.
You know, we're going to follow the process, and if the process requires an arm, we'll find an arm that has to go into the machine, into the lion, right? It would have been that kind of, like, mealy-mouth BS. We don't like to talk about arms.
My wayward pinky.
Yeah. I don't like to talk about arms. We're going to just follow the process. Yeah, no, this is a guy with passion. I love the answer. The follow-up stuff, like you said, is the thing. There's a lot of risk where it could have gone wrong, but I'm glad they played. PETA played it well.
Yes, I am not normally a fan of PETA, but I thought they played it very well, to their credit.
Yes.
And I appreciated their press release and the way that they've handled it. So thank you, PETA, for being you today.
The one thing I can tell you, though, is that if anybody can handle this, it's Dan Campbell, because he's probably the only person that can empathize with being a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest that he's in right now.
He is so comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
And I think that comes across when he's interviewing. That interview was with Barstool, I believe, wasn't it? It was Barstool.
Yep.
I don't want to give them credit for it. But when he's been on with Pat McAfee, when he's been on with anywhere else, he's Dan Campbell. He's not who you want Dan Campbell to be. He's Dan Campbell, and who Dan Campbell wants Dan Campbell to be.
Yeah.
And that never changes. That's a consistency of behavior. What did we talk about with the last regime? One of the problems was that we liked Matt Patricia a lot off the field. You and I both did.
Yep. He's a great guy.
It was a different dude. He wasn't genuine to who he was when he was in front of the players, and they saw that, and it didn't work.
You need to be you.
We do not have that problem with Dan Campbell or Brad Holmes or Chris Spielman or Mark Brunell or Aaron Glenn or Anthony Lynn. That's one of the reasons why the Chargers players loved Anthony Lynn, because he was the same dude all the time.
Advice beyond football. You got there because of who you are. The last thing you want to do is be somebody different once you get there, because only thing you're going to do is drive people away, because they're going to look at you and say, I can't trust that person because I don't really know who they are.
Phony.
Yep.
Go away. I don't trust you.
Yep. So if there's anything to learn from this former regime, it's that you can use in your life, is as you find yourself in leadership positions and moving your way up, remember you got there because of who you are and what you know how you do it. Don't try to be something that you're not. Please don't. Everybody will be happier and better for it. And you'll be better off for it too.
Absolutely.
And on that bombshell, we'll call it a show. How about that? Remember, don't forget about us on Patreon, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. You get access to the Slack. You get access to the Discord. The Discord, I have an idea for the Discord. I know you don't have Discord access on your phone, Riz, and we absolutely love the conversations. You're so active with us in the Slack and amongst the other stuff. We don't want to lose that, but I have something we can use this Discord for that's going to be a great added bonus for our Patreon people. As little as $1 a month will get you access. Go ahead and do that. Patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. Get yourself in there. Have some fun with us. Also follow us on Twitter at DET Lions Podcast, DET Lions Podcast. And as you see spelled right there, at Jeff Risden. At Jeff Risden. He's a great follow. He's got all kinds of good stuff. He is super interactive. We both.
I forgot I'm mirrored. Point for it. You're an idiot.
And join Riz with the cbd.detroitlionspodcast.com. Give us a call via Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line at 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Leave a message. We'll get your call on the air. Love to get you folks on the air. We're going to start taking
calls. Please call. We really do love the calls.
We are going to take more calls here as the offseason goes on, too. We will also do some live shows. We've got some things we're lining up as AMAs as well, where you can take advantage within the Reddit, and we'll be able to do calls live with people you know.
Certain people.
People you know. All right, got a lot going on. Remember, go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Subscribe to the show. So what happens, Riz?
So we can come into your ears automatically.
That's right. Who wouldn't want that? Thank you for tuning in. We're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. Remember, no pants, no toasters, no hot tubs, no problems, baby. Because we're your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Final seconds winding down, and look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.
You've had enough of that shit.